We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey everyone, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Allison Brennan and Jessica Tree of The Social Type. These ladies first launched their foil-pressed greeting card line in 2010 and have since expanded into other paper categories, including their very popular matchboxes. On this episode, Jess and Allison talk about their inspiration for creating new products, how they split responsibilities as business partners, and we talk about the importance of slow but steady growth in business. Hey, Jess. Hey, Allison. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi.
Hi, Katie.
All right. So let's start at the very beginning. How did you two meet and how did this idea for The Social Type come to life?
I actually grew up with Allison's husband, Sean, and that is how I know Allison. Sean was living in Los Angeles and I was living in San Diego, and he actually introduced me to Allison and we just quickly became friends.
That's awesome.
We had a similar design background, so we connected on that level. Right away.
That's awesome. And Jess, your background is graphic design, right? Like that's what you did prior to Social Type?
Yeah, I was an art director at some small ad agencies, and also I was in publishing.
Nice. What about you, Allison? What was your life before Social Type?
I worked for several different companies. I started out when I moved to LA. I worked for a clothing company called Junk Food. They still exist. And they were a really young company when I started with them. So I kind of grew with them for a few years. And then I started working for a stationer in Los Angeles, Jonathan Wright & Company. Mm-hmm. And then I moved when Minted opened. They were a new company. I moved there and worked for them for a little bit. And that's when Jess and I actually kicked off The Social Type. And we were both living in San Francisco. We had both moved there independently. And then we were like, let's do something. We need to be creative together. So,
so it started more like, did you know you wanted it to be a business when you first started? Or was it more of like, she's cool, I like designing with her, like, let's make some fun things more as a hobby or, you know, just for family and friends, kind of for funsies? Or was it that we want to make a business out of this?
I think we initially both were like, let's be our own, you know,
I think our own boss and do this. I think we both wanted to be entrepreneurs and do our own thing. And I was in the publishing world at the time, and she introduced me to Minted. And I'm like, this stuff is so much fun. And so we really started talking about Minted and working together. And that was kind of where everything sort of kicked off.
That's cool.
Like, it's really fun. That's where I got like super interested in. I don't know, that line of work, just really interested me and was like so much more fun than my publishing job was. So.
Right. It's so funny. I've been talking to a lot of alums recently and hearing their initial stories of how they got into this. And so many of us were looking for a creative outlet from our day jobs and just wanting to kind of explore different avenues, you know? And so it's interesting to hear how you two came together. What an interesting background too, of like the connections, the personal connections as well as professional. That's great. So having a business partner can be a challenge for some duos. How do you guys split business responsibilities?
It's kind of been because we started off together in the same place, and then I had moved back to LA. We had already started our business. So we've kind of taken on different, we split things differently, and it kind of is always, it's like an
it's
evolving
changing.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we keep adding or, you know, taking away elements of our business, and we really just have to focus and split those roles up. When we first started out and then I moved to LA, we were just basically designing, like we had a long distance design relationship. Yeah. So we would design stuff, we would use Skype or we would, you know, use Messenger, whatever at the time was the thing. And we would send files back and forth, like via Skype. I think a lot of Skype we were using.
Yeah, we both had full-time jobs, so we were just trying to fit it in as much as possible at night. And yeah, then everything sort of organically started working for us.
That's awesome. So are both of you doing the design work for the business now, or does one of you handle more the like operational type of activities? How is it split now compared to then?
do. Design is almost like its own thing. Like, we really kind of both design. We come up with ideas together. We design together. And this is how it kind of happened at the beginning. Like, I would start a file and be like, I don't know what to do with this. This is, like, ugly. Or I have an idea, but I just don't know how to produce it. And then I'd be like, here, Jess, here's the file. Can you make something happen? And then that was, like, vice versa, you know. Or Jess would send me something, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I think if we just, you know, tweak this and move that, whatever. So that's kind of still how our design relationship works.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get, like, really frustrated with a project and be like, I cannot look at this file anymore, and I'll hand it off to Allison and she'll fix it, or vice versa. So we have, like, a pretty good design thing going between us now.
Yeah, it sounds like you share a brain and a general aesthetic too, of course, but...
Yeah,
and then as far as operation stuff, it's really changed in the last 5 months since we've had the store, so...
Yeah.
I'm kind of focusing more on the store, Jess is focusing more on wholesale and... producing our
production
products, and yeah.
Nice.
There's not many hours in the day.
I know. The number of times a day I wish to clone myself is it's growing too large. I need to hire more people, apparently. But okay, so the social type has been on the cutting edge of some really fun and amazing trends in the past years. I mean, you guys started with the foil early on. You did hologrammed cards, you know, even extending into different product categories like your matchboxes, for example. So what inspires you when the two of you are developing these new products, and also when you're thinking about kind of expanding or moving into an area you haven't done before, a type of product you haven't done before? What's behind the scenes in terms of your inspiration?
I think initially when we were first launching our line, you know, we saw, but it wasn't a huge, we didn't really see it at all in the stationery world. So we were like, we want to utilize that. And that's really taken now, like, every single one of our products has foil and in some shape or form. So that was, like, an element that we weren't really seeing a lot of when we launched our line in 2010. Yeah.
Feels like a long time ago, huh?
And it's kind of evolved from that. But that's kind of, like, the base of our products now, is having a little bit of shimmer. And then as far as new products,
I think we're always looking for interesting, you know, printing processes and being different from everybody else in the industry. Which is why, like, we got really excited about using hologram, and then we started doing the foil and embossed cards. So we're always constantly searching for something that's unique and different to set us apart from everybody else.
Yeah. Well, it shows.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that keeps us excited too, and keeps our, you know, otherwise we get bored with things and we just keep doing the same. So trying new processes and... that's fun for us.
Yeah.
I think it takes a delicate balance, right? Like, you don't want to be recreating the wheel every time you go to have a new release. But at the same time, you do want to keep things fresh and relevant and new and stay, you know, ahead of what's happening in the industry. I love how you talked about keeping an eye on what's happening from the standpoint of, we're not seeing a lot of this. How could we work this into the products we're creating? What about new product categories? I mean, the matchboxes were a big deal for you guys to do. You were one of the very first, if not the first, that I saw in our industry doing those. How did those come about, and were there challenges with getting those to market?
I think, there were definitely huge challenges. I think I bought some matchboxes that were, like, just kind of vintage looking somewhere. And I've always been, I think Jess and I have both always been attracted to, like, matchboxes, like, at a restaurant or...
Yeah.
And, you know, we both had only ever seen kind of, like, a glossy, like, super manufactured,
like old school looking.
Yeah. And we were like, why don't we make matches that look like our cards? Like, the same paper, same foil, same printing process, printed by the same people. Just so, you know, it was something that we hadn't seen. Really fresh and fun. And they really took off, but we definitely had our, because we were producing them in the United States versus overseas, we had some issues getting, you know, the strike right, getting the shape right. There were a million different things. We even sent out a bunch of you know, our first round of matches that were produced, we had to recall. And luckily, we only sent them to maybe 10 stores, but we had to recall because they were basically falling apart.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So there were
some strike issues and
Well, I want to pause on that for a moment. Thank you for sharing that with us, because I think there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, coming up with new ideas, but they're struggling to get them to market. They're struggling with how to create them, how to get the finished product done. And so I think it's good for them and for me and everyone else to hear sometimes things don't go as planned, right? You guys, you went through all your research and development, you created the product, you had it tested, and, you know, you found out that things weren't going right once it got to the store. But to take action on that and to do what's right and pull it back in. And then, you know, I assume you either found another manufacturer or tweaked your manufacturing process. Is that what happened next?
Yeah, we just tweaked it. And then, you know, everybody that we were working with, the stores that we had sent them to, everybody was super, like, that's the great thing about this industry. Most people are really just chill. They want to support you. They want you to get it right, you know. So everybody was very, for the most part, patient with us, and we're, you know, we just made sure to do right and get them great looking product, great functioning product as soon as possible after that.
Well, thank you again for sharing that. I think that it's always a challenge to create new products, and, you know, things go wrong sometimes and it's outside of our control, and we just need to handle it with grace and make decisions and move forward and correct our mistakes. And I think that hearing that story, you guys did a great job in handling that. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. I think we're really excited about it. So it was like, we need to make sure that this is right, and they've been successful. So just taking the time.
And we're always working on quality and making them better and better.
Well, I was going to say, your brand is one that I've always looked to as very high quality, very well done in terms of not just the design component, but also the manufacturing process. So I can totally understand from your point of view, like, we want to get this right. We want to make sure it's a high quality product that matches the rest of the offerings or the rest of the things we're offering. So I've been getting a lot of questions lately from people that are grappling with inventory. And, you know, again, they're trying to create more product categories and things, but they're outsourcing all their manufacturing. So it's not something like a letterpress printer that could run, you know, 50 or 100 greeting cards themselves, see how they do, and then, you know, run more when they need it. You guys outsource your manufacturing. So, and, you know, that can be scary. It can be costly, and you have to do things in higher volumes to get the price down. What are your thoughts on inventory, and how have you decided how much inventory to keep on hand or how much to produce when you're running something that's new? It's a complicated question, I know.
Yeah, there's so many factors that go into it, and we're constantly dealing with inventory issues. It's just like an ongoing thing that we're constantly dealing with. I think that initially, especially doing a brand new products, you know, at this year's NSS, we're doing a whole new line of patch cards that we're really excited about. But it's that thing of like, okay, how well are these going to sell? And how many do we need to produce? Because that's just a question you just never, ever know.
Right.
So there's so many factors that play in, you know, are we going to meet our, you know, margin on this? And we want a lot of stock in-house. I don't know. There's just so many different factors at play. And so I think that initially we tend to go a little bit lower to see how the product does. And then like our matchboxes, now we're kind of upping our ante, and, you know, we know that they sell really well. So our quantities are getting larger and larger.
Yeah. So you're willing to take a lower margin on a first run, for example, to see how it goes. And then you'll, you know, make adjustments as you see.
Yeah, and we've learned our lesson too. You know, not every product sells. We have products that we need to just discount and get out of there. There's stuff that doesn't work too. So I think if it's a new product, you know, the less risk, the better. But at the same time, you do have to take a risk on new stuff. So there's a fine line.
Right.
There is. There's a really fine line. I mean, as Jess, you were saying, there's so many factors that go into it. What are your margins? What's your storage space like? You know, what are you paying price per piece? And, you know, how many of these do you think you can sell? And obviously, once you've been doing something a little while, you have a better sense of how it will sell. So you have that confidence going in and purchasing more. Allison, you brought up the concept of discontinuing products, and this is something I'm also hearing a lot about, and I kind of would like to get your take on it. I'm of the mindset that that people shouldn't be discontinuing products unless they just aren't selling through or unless they're really not making the margins for it. Like if it's still selling, but maybe it's 3 or 4 years old, I'm of the mindset, keep it in your line and continue selling it. But what is your philosophy? What do you guys do with regards to discontinuing? And
yeah, I think we've struggled with this in the, you know, the more years that pass by, there's older and older stuff that we still have stock on, but it still sells, but it's not flying off the shelf, you know? So it's hard. We've just spent some time going through our current offering and like figuring out what we wanted to kind of move on from. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some stuff though that we produced 3 years ago. We sold just a handful of it. We're like, okay, let's try to like sail this somehow, get rid of it, get it off. It doesn't make sense. It's like dead stock sitting in our warehouse. So it doesn't make sense to keep it. That's when we kind of move on. But
also, I think that as our brand has grown and we've really developed an aesthetic, you know, some of the stuff we designed 5 years ago, we're like, this doesn't fit anymore.
Yeah.
Yes. And
we think a lot of things, a lot of factors play into that as well.
Thank you for bringing that up, Jess. That's actually something I should have mentioned in my list of considerations as well. If something that you designed years ago does not fit with the direction the brand is heading, I agree, pull it. But I'm hearing a lot of people say that, oh, well, this has been around for 5 years and, you know, I need to pull it because it's not new anymore. But yet it's still one of their best sellers. And to me, I would say no, keep it in. But I do understand that everyone is different in how they make these decisions, and everyone is different in terms of they know where they want this brand to go and where they want this line to go. And so from an outside perspective, it's easier to say, oh, cut that or don't cut that or whatever it is. So it's interesting to hear how you guys do it.
There's definitely been instances where we're just like, we hate that card so much and we don't care if it sells that well.
Yeah. Like aesthetically, we're like, like what were we even thinking?
Right. Oh my gosh. I had that too. I was like, I cannot look at this pattern one more time. Like I just need to.
And we're like our own worst critics.
Of course
right?
You are. We all are.
Something that everyone else loves and we're like, how can people even like that? Or we just have seen it so many times or have sleeved so many of them.
Right.
I think it's hard though, like to come, like try not to compare yourself to like a fashion label or, you know, greeting card manufacturers, you produce so many styles. The demand, like people always want
new stuff.
It's you know, we've been talking about that a lot too, and it's kind of like an industry standard if you're an established brand to keep producing, but how many cards can you print? And I know some people like that they could make cards their entire life, but we're like, what? Okay. Adding like having us at the Matchboxes, it was like, let's do something different. We can continue with our cards,
right.
But having fresh, fun, exciting things so that, you know, we don't get bored too. And then I think that it extends to our customers.
Well, and two, going back to your point about like people cranking out different designs and cards just to have new, you know, that's not going to be that effective either in the long run. Like just because you can crank out 20 new designs or whatever it might be, you know, it still has to flow with the rest of the things you're selling, and it has to be new, but it has to be good too.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
We've done that too, where like in the, like when looking at discontinuing stuff, we're like, oh, that one we totally just cranked out at the last minute.
Yeah,
3 in the morning.
We should have. that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody stop us? Just kidding. That's awesome. So you guys recently opened up a retail storefront. Congratulations. That's a big step for your business. How did this idea to open up a storefront kind of come about?
I think when Jess and I like first met in San Francisco in like 2008 or 2009, I was like, we're going to open up a store. And then that just like, you know, and that's it's really hard to just back of our heads. Make happen.
Yeah.
It's a huge undertaking. So this was like pre, you know, our greeting card line. And then it was like, okay, financially it makes sense to start out with our line. So
yeah.
I think it's kind of always been in the background that it would be, you know, if we have a brand someday, another way to a brand developer, another way to push our brand and have it, you know, be visible to many more people.
Right. So now, I mean, since you open up a retail store, you two ladies cannot handle everything yourselves. I mean, you cannot be designing the wholesale line and managing the store and all these things. How has your business kind of morphed in that? I mean, I mean no disrespect, but I know that it's very difficult to juggle these things. How has your team dynamics, like, how has that changed? Because I know you've brought some people on recently, like, you know, is that all new with the store coming on, or did you have people working for you before? How has this kind of changed over time?
We had people working for us before in fulfillment and wholesale. We hired a new wholesale manager, and she's the
wonderful.
Best. Yeah. I think right now we're still really figuring out our balance. We've only been open 5 months, and financially opening a store is a very large undertaking. So I think we don't have all the answers yet, and we do have staff. So I think right now making sure a lot of our staff, like our wholesale manager, knows how to run our register in the event that, you know, we don't ask her to do that, but like she knows that. And then the same with like, our store staff, they also know how to fulfill an order or sleeve cards. So we're trying to make sure that everyone, you know, everyone kind of wears many hats right now. And ideally, you know, in the future, we have more specific roles. But right now we're kind of figuring out that balance.
I think it's okay to be fluid. Yeah. I think you guys, you know, as you mentioned, you're just figuring this out. I'm still figuring out my team as well. You know, we're constantly a work in progress, but I do know that as these businesses grow and as your company has scaled, you know, we have to start letting go of some of these things because it's just not feasible for us to do that, all the things and have a life and it's not sustainable long term. So I'm glad you guys are bringing people on, and it sounds like you're doing a great job of training them in a way that makes it easy for them to kind of wear the different hats. And I was talking with Kristen Lay at Thimble Press recently, and she said the same thing. Like, everyone pretty much starts out on her fulfillment, on the fulfillment line of sleeving and doing stuff like that. And as they start to get to know the company and she starts to see what their strengths are, she can then give them more responsibility in other areas. So, you know, we're small businesses. We got to run things lean and mean and make things fit where we can. So that's great.
And I feel like anytime we like set like specific goals or whatever, I mean, those things change all the time and we just have to like go with the flow and make it work no matter what.
Yeah.
We don't have an option, so it's
and
like,
ideally, Jess and I are just doing exactly, you know, exactly what, like, I'm just buying for the store, just, you know, whatever. That would be awesome, but we're so small and we're still growing that someday. And it does grow, like we've had a wholesale manager in the past, and then, you know, we downsized a little bit, and then we grew, and it's always our roles are changing, like,
all the time.
Yeah. We're also wearing many hats.
Of course you are. No, I feel the same way. I mean, I have a small team as well, but there's been times where I needed more hours from my graphic designer. And then there were times where I needed more hours from people to help with events. You know, it just, your business is every month it looks a little bit different, right? You've got seasons that are busy on the wholesale side. You've got times that are going to be busier in the retail side. So no, that's awesome. So looking back, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs that are just starting out in the product space and want to create something of their own? Not necessarily stationary, but just, you know, their own product line.
Just to go for it. I don't know. I think so many people talk about, you know, building their own business and they have all these great ideas. Literally just go for it. Start. Like, we started so small and, you know, we had no clue how it would grow. And it's just been like this really amazing organic thing that has happened. And the biggest part was just saying, let's do this and going from there.
And I think working hard to,
Oh, yeah, it's a struggle.
And smart. Hard and smart. Yes. You don't have to kill yourself, but at the same time, if you want to get from A to B, it requires a little bit of hard work and some late nights. Jess and I both had, you know, full-time day jobs for a really long time before mm-hmm. we made this happen. And we didn't pay ourselves for a really long time. We had our day jobs to fall back on, but we kind of just kept investing in our company and putting a lot of man hours into it. And and it was exhausting, but we made it work and we got here. It felt like for a while that we would never get to this point. So, but it's always like, okay, when are we going to get to this next point?
Right.
We're kind of always looking forward.
I appreciate you saying that because, you know, we look around on social media and we see all these companies that look like overnight successes, right? Like we have never heard of these people. And now all of a sudden they've got crazy Instagram following or they're in the press everywhere. And it looks like they've just started this business yesterday. And the truth of the matter is all of us are just plugging along, working yep. hard and being smart and, you know, building these empires slowly but surely, right? So thank you for that transparency of sharing, you know, the growth and not taking a paycheck and, you know, in reinvesting in your business. I think all of us can relate to that because we've been there or we are currently there in our business right now. So thank you. So what is next for Social Type? What's coming up on your radar, guys?
What is next? Well, NSS. That is us. We're pretty excited about within our business, our store. We're just starting to launch workshops. We have a really, not to toot our own horns, but our space is pretty big and we can accommodate, you know, events and workshops. So we're really excited to kind of kick that off and get more people in our space on Sunset. And,
Yeah,
we have some new products coming out.
Yeah, tell me about those or share what you can reveal.
So we're adding to our matchboxes a new style. So that's really fun. We're pumped about that. Mm-hmm. And then Jess mentioned the patch cards that mm-hmm. are adhesive patches, but they're very similar to our cards, but with a patch. So it's kind of like a gift and a card in one.
Cute.
I'm excited about those.
Yeah.
Awesome. Just, we're always looking to add new products and new fun stuff we're excited about.
Good. Excellent. Well, I really appreciate your time today. Where can people find you online?
TheSocialType.com.
And what about Instagram or social media? Where are you guys hanging out there?
/TheSocialType.
Cool. All right, ladies, thank you so much for your time today. It was really fun hearing about your story and how you're working on your product line and how the store has impacted your business too. I've been really impressed watching the growth you've had and just really appreciate you spending time to come back and share your story with us today. So thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Katie.
Hey, friends, if you're thinking about wholesale and or trade shows in the near future, I highly recommend you check out our Paper Camp program. The next one's going to be in September, and it's 2 amazing but intense days where we talk about how to ensure your product line is ready for wholesale, how to reach retail buyers, which sales tools you need to have, and really how to create them, plus all the nitty-gritty details that you need to know before you do a large wholesale show. We have a fantastic group of speakers joining us. They'll sit side by side with you during the program, and we even have time reserved for one-on-one sessions. Sarah from Constellation & Co. said that Paper Camp was pivotal for her business and the best money she's ever spent investing in herself and her business. When Lisa from Tiramisu Papery came to camp, she was already working with a handful of wholesale accounts. And after camp, she went home and put in the hard work and is now selling to over 120 stores and working with 2 sales reps. If you want to make transitions in your business or refine your current wholesale program, head over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp to register. And just so you know, seats are limited. We like to keep things small so that you get personal attention, and we also want to make sure that all of your questions are answered. So more information is available at tradeshowcamp.com, then click on Paper Camp, and we hope you'll join us. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at proof2product.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.